Welcome to the Athenaeum Review podcast, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. I'm Ben Lima, and our guest today is Dr. Zsuzsanna Osvat, who is Lewis Chair of Holocaust Studies and Director of the Holocaust Studies Program at UT Dallas. Among her many works include 6 books in English and Hungarian, and numerous articles. She's collaborated on translations with the poet Frederick Turner on volumes including The Golden Goblet, Selected Poems of Goethe, coming out this spring from Deep Vellum Publishing, as well as 3 volumes of Hungarian poetry, Foamy Sky, The Major Poems of Miklós Radnóti, which received Hungary's most prestigious literary prize, The Iron Blue Vault, Attila József Selected Poems, and Light Among the Shade, 800 Years of Hungarian Poetry. She's also the author of In the Footsteps of Orpheus, The Life and Times of Miklós Radnóti, 1909 to 1944, as well as a memoir of her own entitled When the Danube Ran Red. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
I wanted to start by asking you about the book, which covers 800 years of Hungarian poetry, and the question of history in Hungarian literature. I understand that throughout this period, whether it be the Mongols or the Ottomans or the Habsburgs, there was a long history of kind of outside powers threatening this country. And could you talk a little bit about this idea of national identity or the sense of being threatened by outside invaders in the poems?
Sure. So really the first invaders that have done tremendous damage and killed many Hungarians were the Tatars in the 13th century and a little bit earlier. And somehow they left basically within a couple of years, or maybe even less, because their leader died. And so they went back. But the country couldn't really get well again, couldn't really reconstitute its financial and moral strength. It was in pure despair for a very long time. And when it started to function again, then came the Turks and occupied the country. They didn't kill as many people as the Tatars did, but took away many Hungarian young men to Turkey to raise them to be soldiers. And they somehow were part of this sense that the Hungarians started to have, that we are a small country and we are constantly occupied by powerful, rich, and strong countries. And so, in a way, this idea has developed and became very strong. After 150 years, the Austrians helped the Hungarians to defeat the Turks. But then the Austrians arrived in Hungary and took over the power. And so the Hungarians could again, felt again, that they don't have the freedom to be free. And as time passed and the 18th century came, and somehow the idea of nationalism strengthened in Europe, and also in Hungary, people started to have this feeling that we are always defeated because we are weak and we are not as strong, and as there is not as many of us as in other folks and other people. And so this kind of nationalism, but we must not look upon this as a negative picture as we see it from the 21st century's view, but it was an 18th century view, and it was the truth that the country was constantly occupied. And that hasn't very much changed, because after the Turks were defeated, the Austrians took over, and Hungary has made desperate attempts to become free, including a bloody revolution of 1848. And then somehow after a while in 1867, a piece of Austria has developed, and the country became, in 1863, the Austro-Hungarian monarchy. And the country has really blossomed and flourished, and it was a wonderful time. But then, unfortunately, it got into war. It has been, you know, many people say it has been partly responsible for the First World War. And this had also nationalistic reasons, because it has somehow never forgotten that parts of it were taken away. And even though it was very happy as Austro-Hungaria, as an Austro-Hungarian creation, I mean, there were strong desires to be even more independent. Came the First World War, in which it was defeated, and then the Allies have decided to create finally peace. And their move was that they simply have taken away from Hungary territories that belonged to Hungary for 800 years. And they said, what was the truth, that Slovakian people live here, and Czech people live here, and Romanian people live here. And the reason that there were so many different people living in Hungary was really because the Austrian kings were very much concerned about the fact that there are so few Hungarians, because they were killed in so many terrible wars. So they brought in all kinds of people, you know, Czechs and Slovaks and Romanians and all kinds of people, and they felt at home there. And after a while, when nationalism has become a worldwide phenomenon, or at least a European-wide phenomenon, they felt that, you know, the Hungarians are ruling them, and they wanted independence. So the First World War broke out, and Hungary was defeated. And then Hungary was really cut down to a minimal size. Yeah. And, you know, many poets were united over generations in this concept of the country's loss of people and loss in everything, in riches and in coal and in other, you know, forests and so on. And so it became a general attitude of poets and writers to mourn about this loss. Yeah. Yeah. And this has, in a way, developed a very strong sense of nationalism that has developed elsewhere too. But in Hungary, it had somehow some... not that it had a reason, because it had a reason everywhere, probably. But here the loss was so tremendous that people became preoccupied with. Yeah. And it became the preoccupation of especially poets.
Can I ask you, in preparing this volume, this survey, Light Among the Shade, 800 Years of Hungarian Poetry, could you tell us about maybe first how you selected the poems to include, and then also about the process that you and Fred Turner use when you're translating these from Hungarian to English?
So, well, you know, in Hungary, especially in my time, But I really think that even today, many children grow up with loving Hungarian poetry,
yeah,
and with knowing Hungarian poetry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, unless you know a poem by heart, or almost by heart, you don't really know that poem as well as when you are capable of saying it and feel the taste of the words in your mouth.
Yeah.
And so, and see the images, which are not easy to see when you just read it for the first or second time even. So, you know, I grew up very much as my generation did. I don't know how children grow up today in Hungary, but I still think that there are many children who grow up today with the knowledge of many poems. I am not sure of that.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't check it.
Sure.
But it is. I mean, I would say yes.
Yeah.
But certainly in my age, I was not unique by knowing hundreds of poems by heart.
Yeah.
My husband was a mathematician, and he knew hundreds of poems by heart.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was maybe the privilege of some children who went to very good schools or whose parents were also interested in poetry. I can't judge that very well. But basically, it is true what I am saying about me and about my husband and about virtually all of our friends in Hungary. So I loved these poems, and I loved Radnóti because I was a child when the Holocaust has taken place, and when Radnóti's first poems have appeared after the war in 1946-47, I understood from the poems, by reading the poems, what happened to him, how he was tortured, and how he was sentenced to death, and how he was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, all of Hungary interested in poetry and interested in the war knew that he was shot by his own countrymen, and that his body was found, you know, 1.5 years after he was shot, after he died. It was shot into a mass grave. And so it has shaken me to the core, and especially because in 1944, I was myself so afraid, and I was afraid basically ever since I was little because I heard what the adults were talking about.
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, very much shaken by his fate, and I loved him very much. And then after the Hungarian Revolution, I and my husband, we went to Germany, where we lived for almost 6 years, and then he got an invitation to Austin at the university into the math and physics department, and he was an astronomer at that time, but he did mostly theoretical physics and mathematics, and then we came to Austin, and from Austin a friend of ours started the Graduate Research Center of the Southwest, which was the beginning of UTD's mathematics department. And so we came to Dallas. And so anyway, I spoke English always, as I spoke German, but German I spoke more or less without accent, while English I am speaking with a heavy accent because I was somehow not a child anymore when I learned English. And so, you know, but I read all these beautiful poems, and I felt such sorry for English-speaking people, you know, not as if they wouldn't know enough poems if they like poetry, but, you know, that they don't know these particular Hungarian, this incredible poetry.
Yeah.
And so Fred Turner became a close friend of ours, and we were talking about, and I said, you know, I mean, there is this greatest poet after the war, Miklós Radnóti, and he said, oh yes, I heard about him. And so, and then discussion here and there, and then so, you know, we agreed that we try to translate together.
Yeah.
And we sat down and we did the first. I really almost think that For Miss Sky was the first.
Okay.
And or at least belonged to the first ones. And he was enormously moved by them and by Radnóti. Then we traveled to Hungary and met Radnóti's wife, who stayed alive after the war and the Holocaust. And then we published this volume, and then we got Hungarian, the highest prize in literature that you can get for this translation. And the book was translated again. No, the book was published again, not translated again. It is the same book. And then I wrote a volume about Radnóti's life, which was so interesting and so important. And after a while, we did József, and then we did a volume in which we have selected these poems from the Middle Ages until today. And then we started to feel that Goethe, the great German poet, is also a good topic.
Yeah.
And so by now we are translating Goethe's poetry, and it has come out. It will come out in a month or two, because they are already publishing it.
Yeah.
And we also have done the first part of Faust, which will probably also be published. It certainly will be performed. And so, here we are doing our work, and we hope to do Faust's second part as well.
Wow, that's really amazing. We have here a couple of these poems. I wondered if you could maybe read one or two of these translations and tell us a little bit about the poem.
I would be glad to read, and this is a very interesting poem you have chosen, because this is one of the first ones I have ever read by Radnóti. I mean, I didn't know Radnóti. Nobody knew Radnóti, only a few people who were working in literature, because his poetry was not published after 1940-41, because he was Jewish.
Yeah.
And he was also, he had to go to the front as a Jewish labor serviceman.
Yeah.
And then he was killed in this way. So I didn't know, and I was a child, so I didn't know about him until 1946, 45 or 46, when I read this poem for the first time.
And this is a Foamy Sky.
It is Foamy Sky, yes. The moon sways in a foamy sky. How strange that I am alive. A blend, a fish and death searches this age, and they turn white on whom it lays its hand. Sometimes the year looks around and shrieks, looks around and faints away. What kind of autumn lies in wait? What winter dulled with agony to gray? The forest bled, and every hour in that revolving time bled too. The wind was crawling numbers, huge and darkening in the unsettled snow. I have seen certain things, such things that now the air feels dense as earth. A rustling, tepid silence holds me fast, as in that time before my birth. I come to a standstill by this trunk. It stirs its thick leaves angrily, reaches a branch down for my neck. Now I am neither weak nor cowardly, just tired, unmoving. And the branch searches my hair, terrified, mute. Such things one must forget, but I have never yet been able to forget. Foam gushes forth upon the moon. A dark green venom streaks the sky. I roll myself a cigarette. I'm slowly, carefully, a living eye. So this is, I mean, he knows already what will happen to him.
Yeah. And this is from?
1940. At this point, the Germans were not in the country.
Right.
There was no yellow star you had to wear. But by 1941, men between, I mean, declared as men, between 16 and 40 were called in as slave laborer.
Yeah.
And they were then in 41 taken to the Russian front, where most of them froze to death.
Yeah.
And only a very few survived.
Yeah.
And his group was one of them who survived in 41. They came back, and you would say, oh, thank God, I mean, that is really amazing, and
yeah,
it's wonderful. But then in 1944, he was drafted again,
yeah,
and then he was taken to Yugoslavia, and then marched back to Hungary.
Yeah.
And on the march, he could walk no longer, and those who could walk no longer were shot in the head.
Wow.
And thrown into a mass grave.
Yeah.
And 1.5 years after his death, his corpse was found, yeah, in that mass grave.
Our guest today is Zsuzsanna Osvat. When we come back, we'll talk more about modernism and poetry in Hungary.